Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
I know exactly where I was when that phone call came in. And I remember her saying, Alicia, I'm really sorry, but your numbers have dropped. You're going to miscarry. I never doubted for a second that any bad news would ever come after that.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And though you and I
are a part of it,
we're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. For Alicia Kearns, things had always seemed to work out in life. She'd never really faced an impossible situation, certainly nothing that would require great faith. But then Alicia learned there was almost zero chance that she could have a baby. That was one of her greatest desires. Now Alicia needed to hear from God in a way she never had before. This is chapter 51 of Epic, Alicia Kearns' story. Tell me a little bit about what you were like, spiritually speaking, before all this took place.
If you were to ask me then, I would say I was spiritually fine. But looking to how I am now, to where I was dry, totally dry, and dependent on myself, because I never really needed to be dependent on anyone or anything. And if I did pray, it was like a 911 call. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, something's happening. God, I need you to do this for me. You know, I never asked for wisdom. I never asked for direction, because I never really needed wisdom or direction. It was just different. Well, my husband and I, we got married after I graduated college, and then we were waiting on him to graduate college. And so we were just still kind of just going through life.
Were you thinking about having kids at that point?
No, not at that point. Because he was still in school. We lived in an apartment that was 475 square feet. And I remember it because we paid $475 a month. It was $1 per square feet. It wasn't something that was really on my mind, you know, but it was just one of those things where if it happened, if it was fine. If not, that's really good too, because we were not probably secure enough.
So when did that begin to change?
Well, the first 5 years we were trying, but not trying. That's what we like to call it. It was after we moved up from Florida, after we graduated college, that we were then ready to start a family. But at that point, whenever we moved up here, I kind of already suspected that we were going to struggle with it. Because, I mean, 5 years of not protecting, and I don't have any children. But also, when we got married, I began birth control in August, because we got married in August. And at the college I was going to, they give you a free supply of it for 6 months, because I had never been to an OBGYN.
Oh my goodness.
Even for this, even at 23, I got married at 23. I had never been. And when I found out you could go to the school nurse at the college and get a free supply without an examination, I said, sign me up. So I got the 6 months free. And once that 6 months ran out in January, and I really didn't like how the birth control made me feel. You know, I just felt like I was a totally different person. But as soon as I went off, I gained like 25 pounds in 2.5 months. And my nickname growing up was Olive Oil. I was tall, 5'7", barely 120 pounds. And I blew up to, you know, I gained 25 pounds in like 2 months. And I had never started my period after that, after I stopped birth control.
Did you have any idea what was going on?
I had no idea.
Wow.
I just knew that I was miserable. And I started getting really bad, like cystic acne. And I was becoming miserable. Self-esteem was, you know, going down. And I thought, maybe it's too much Hamburger Helper, because our diet was not that great. We needed to eat cheap foods. And I worked for the Department of Children and Family Social Services as a caseworker. Highly stressful job, working sometimes 70 hours in a week.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, maybe things are just compiling. Until one day I was sitting on my couch after work watching Oprah, back when Oprah was on.
Yeah.
And she had Dr. Oz on as a special guest. And he was talking about women who suffer from polycystic ovarian syndrome. And he started going through all these list of things. And I'm like, that's me. That's exactly what sounds like what I have. And I still never sought out a doctor. I did what a lot of people do, Dr. Google. Dr. Oz diagnosed me and Dr. Google helped me.
Were you afraid of going to the doctor, or you just...
Yeah, it's not that I was necessarily, not out of fear of what they would tell me.
Okay.
It's just, you know, I've never had to make my own doctor's appointments. I never had to worry about like, how do we deal with insurance? And it just was something I just didn't want to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and he just talked about how you can change your diet and change exercise and So that's what I did. I changed my diet. I exercised. I dropped all the weight. My cycles came back. And then I finally decided, now I'll go to the doctor. So I went to the doctor right before we were going to be moving. I remember sitting there and he didn't do anything to test to see if I had, they call it PCOS for short. He didn't really test anything, but he was like, you know, how do you not have tons of children? He's like, because of the fact that you haven't been using protection, most people would have several children by now. He goes, so I do suspect that you have PCOS, because I mentioned it to him that I thought that I had it. His recommendation was to put me back on birth control to possibly regulate my hormones. I was naive. I was like, sure. So I went back on birth control. And then when I tried to get off of it, my hormones went completely out of whack. And it wasn't until we moved back up north that I sought out another OBGYN, because the birth control was not, like, I had been on it maybe for 2 months and I wasn't doing well on it. So I went back to establish a new doctor, and she did all the tests. She did the blood work. So, and that's when they did a vaginal ultrasound. And then I went back for another appointment later with my doctor, and I was in her office, and I hate this moment, but the lights were low, and she's almost a family friend now. It's my cousin's grandma. She's like, Leisha? And my name is Alicia, but everybody calls me Leisha. She's like, Leisha? And she starts counting all the cysts on my ovaries. On just one of them, she was up to 15, and I checked out. And what it is they're eggs that have not matured past day 6. And so they just stay. So I don't ovulate. Like, it starts to, and then my hormones are not producing correctly, so then it just stays. And so every month, and so she was, like, up to 15, and then, like, I checked out, and then finally she grabs my hand. She goes, if you weren't wanting to have children, I would just say we just need to clean up, take them out. And oh then she goodness. Passed me a fertility specialist brochure. And I'm like, we haven't even, like, tried. You know, like, at that point, we hadn't even tried. I hadn't done the ovulation prediction stick. You know, I haven't gotten excited and counting up my cycle days. Like, we haven't even gotten to the exciting part, I thought, of trying to conceive. And here she's telling me you're not. So
how did that make you feel in that moment?
At that moment, honestly, I remember thinking, yeah, but we haven't even tried. If I remember right, I think I slid the brochure back to her, you know, like, in my mind, it was still like growing up. Everything that I've, like, what do you mean this is going to be impossible, you know? And so this was, I think, April, May. She gave me till August to try on my own. And then I needed to come back to see her and then send me on. She said she didn't want to, because I was 27 at the time. We were in the process of moving. And so I let it go until like October, November before I made that appointment with her. And then we did end up seeing a fertility specialist that January.
So what does that involve, or what did it involve for you when you decided you'd make that step?
Fertility specialist, it involves money.
Yeah.
Is what it involves, money and time. The specialist was in the same hospital as my OBGYN. And so you just go for a consultation, and honestly, it depends on who your specialist is. He looked at my diagnosis, and it's almost like he just picked a protocol that usually works for most people, and they don't really specialize, you know. And that's something that I look back on, realizing that I kind of just went by whatever he said and whatever he told me to do. Even if I had a gut feeling something wasn't right, or maybe I shouldn't do that. Well, he said that, and I wanted a baby yesterday. But looking back, and that's one of the number one advice I give women, is your doctor's not praying for you. And you need to be praying for you, and you need to be asking other people to pray. And even if what you think you should do or what your gut says goes against what the doctor says, go with what your gut, your Holy Spirit, go with that. A lot of people are like, well, I don't know if it's God speaking to me. A lot of times that gut feeling is God speaking to you, especially if it's going against your natural instinct to want to do, because God knows your body better than anyone. He knows also the time frame of things. So maybe it's not that it's a no forever, just a no right now. You know, because when we started, my husband and I said no to IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. Had nothing to do with morality. We never really even thought about that. We just wanted to kind of keep things as natural as possible. We just thought he'll give us medication, tell us when to bada bing, bada boom, problem solved, which is what we tried in the beginning. I had to inject my stomach with different hormones to make up what my body wasn't doing. And then we had to do ultrasounds every 3 days to see how big the follicles were. Once I got to a certain size, I had to take another shot to release them because my body never wanted to. And then you had to time intercourse, which is business, not pleasure. And it's very stressful.
Right. very complex process.
Very complex process. And so it's one of those things that if you're not strong in the Lord too, like I talked to a lot of women that are really struggling with going through all of this and they're trying to do it in their own strength. And so was I.
So was that beginning to change for you? You talked about how you just kind of spiritually just kind of coasted along through life. Is this the point where you began talking to God more or not yet?
No, because we did the whole time thing and it wasn't working. Either I wasn't making enough eggs or I was making too many. And so that's when he suggested to do IVF. And I remember, you know, of course, my husband and I had already talked about we really didn't want to go that route. And here we are sitting in this room. And without even discussing it, really, I looked at Daniel. I said, okay, I guess we'll do IVF. Even though I knew kind of in my gut, that's probably not what I want to do. And I didn't find out until after it was all said and done. After we had went through the whole process, that even my husband was kind of like hesitant, like, should we think about this a little bit more? Because it's very expensive. It's a surgery. Basically, they have to go in and extract the eggs. And I mean, it's just a lot to deal with. But my doctor said, if you were my daughter, this is what I would tell you to do. That's all he had to say. And I still wasn't really, I mean, it was one of those things like I didn't want to talk to God about it. Because what if he really made it loud and clear? It's a no. And I was kind of what a lot of people do. The doctor says this. Google tells you to do this. X plus Y equals Z. This is what we do.
So you began that process?
We did.
Give me a ballpark. Like how long is it? What is it?
We started, the shots you do for about 7 or 8 days. They monitor you. Once you get a certain number of eggs and they look like they're mature, they can it's crazy how they can determine the size of them, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then on a certain day, they call it a trigger shot. You inject a type of hormone that releases them. And then you go to the doctor, they put you out and they extract the eggs and then they fertilize them. And then they grow them in a certain environment for 5 days. And then I went back 5 days later and they implant up to 2.
So then is it a wait and see? Is that how that works?
Wait about 7 or 8 days and then you take a pregnancy test.
So?
It was positive. This is the part I always cry. I don't feel bad. It's just one of those things. But you usually go for a blood test. And so they draw the blood, to see what your hormone levels. Anything over 5 is considered, a pregnancy or whatever. Well, I was feeling nauseous on a Monday. And my blood test actually wasn't going to be until later that week. But so I had all the symptoms mimicking that I was pregnant because I'm taking progesterone and everything. I thought, well, maybe I am. So my husband was home for lunch and I waited until he left. I didn't have any pregnancy test in the house. I waited until he left. I went to my local Walmart. I did the whole thing where you buy in things you don't need to hide the pregnancy test underneath the bread and trying to hurry through the self-checkout as much as possible. And so I go in there and it 2 lines immediately. Immediately. It wasn't like I had to sit there, come back 3 minutes later. They were there and they were dark. And I remember I put my back up against the bathroom wall and I just slid down and I cried. And all I said out loud was, it's finally over. I can move on, And I didn't tell my husband because I thought this whole process has not been normal. I waited until I did have that blood test, which was a few days later. So I was pregnant for 2 or 3 days and I never told him.
You didn't tell him?
No. Wow. And you'd think after so many years of trying, you would have already had an idea of how you would tell your husband. I had no clue. So I'm Pinteresting everything, but at the same time, I'm Pinteresting nursery ideas for even twins because they implanted 2. And the fact that I is showing pregnant before I'm supposed to even show that I'm pregnant on a blood test. And so, but I had the blood test and she calls back and she's like, you're pregnant.
Wow.
You're pregnant. And so I put together, I saw on Pinterest this daddy duty kit, D-O-O-D-Y kit. And I got a toolbox and I put, tweezers and little tongs, to pick up the diapers. And I got some honey buns and little ducks, the little rubber duckies that you put in bathtubs. Because whenever they showed us a picture of my embryos before they implanted them, they said, oh, look, they're already starting to hatch. And so I bought these little ducklings. And I put on top of the little honey buns and I stuck them in the oven and I took out one of the racks and I'm notorious for this anyway. I meet him in the front yard when he gets off work at 4 o'clock and I'm holding this oven rack. And I was like, I can't get it back in. I was like, I was cleaning out the oven. I can't get this rack back in. And he takes it from my hands. And of course he opens up the oven. I'm staying there with the camera. We've got pictures on my blog of him seeing it for the first time.
2 little ducks and buns in the oven.
Yeah.
What was that moment like for you guys?
Relief, because he's talked more openly about it, but IVF was very stressful on my body. And he remembers, he said to himself, if this doesn't work, we're never doing this again. It's too much. Too much stress. And so in his mind, it worked. We can move on.
Daniel and Alicia believed their prayers had finally been answered. Part two of their story is coming up on Epic. Thanks for listening to Epic. If you enjoy today's show, head to our website at myfaithradio.com and find other episodes of Epic and share this one with a friend. Today, we are hearing Alicia Kern's story about her struggle with infertility. Here's part two.
He said to himself, if this doesn't work, we're never doing this again. It's too much. And so in his mind, it worked. We can move on. I never doubted for a second that any bad news would ever come after that. So then to hear not too long after that, days after that, I'm sorry, but your numbers seem to be dropping. You're going to miscarry.
You weren't ready for that.
No.
Expecting that.
No, it was a Saturday. We went for another blood test. And I remember, I know exactly where we were. We were crossing a bridge, the Wabash Bridge. I know exactly where I was when that phone call came in. And I remember her saying, Alicia, I'm really sorry, but your numbers have dropped. And all I said back was, oh, they have. And then she says, yes. And she went through the whole process of what I'm going to experience probably in the next 7 to 10 days. But we went home. It was silence. It was another probably 30-minute ride home. We both just walked into the house and we just went to sleep.
So what did you do from that point?
Honestly, it's a lot of blur. the days after, honestly. But we went to church. Not too long after that, I remember Daniel was driving and I was looking out of the window, like out into the fields, and I was praying. But now I tell people it was more like thinking. Thinking is not the same as prayer. But a lot of times we think that the worrying that we're doing and the thinking that we're doing is prayer, and it's not. But that's kind of what I felt like I was doing. But I was just thinking about what our next steps would be, because up until that point, I said we weren't going to do it again no matter what the results were going to be. And then here I am thinking we're going to do this tomorrow. We're going to do it again. Roller coaster. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, but I remember looking out the window and just thinking about what my next steps would be. And it wasn't like an audible voice, but because I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't like a burning bush audible voice moment. But I heard like the Holy Spirit say, you're going to have a son. And then right after that, and you're going to name him Josiah. Name him Josiah. And I kind of was like, first of all, Josiah is not in my top 100 list of names. Like, it wasn't for, like, you know, I don't even know anybody named Josiah. Where did this name come from? And I look over at Daniel, and he knew I was crying, but I was trying to, like, hide from crying. That's why I'm looking out the window. And I could see that he was still visibly, because it's only been a couple of days since we found the news. And I thought, I ain't telling him a thing. Like, I have hopped on a crazy train.
Had you ever heard a voice like that before?
Nothing like that. I mean, other than like I have those gut feelings like, right. No, you shouldn't do that. Because I remember, let me back up. As I'm thinking about our next steps, I felt like I had that gut, that feeling like you don't need to do treatments. And I remember like fear gripped me because I thought that's the only way I'm going to get a kid. And here I had this really strong feeling you're not going to do treatments. And that's when I heard you're going to have a son to name him Josiah. So it was almost like fear gripped me like, wait a minute, God doesn't want me to have a kid. He doesn't want me to, like, why is he giving me this feeling to not call the doctor again? And so I looked at my husband. It was back before we had smartphones or anything. And I thought, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home. I'm going to Google the name Josiah. If it means Bigfoot or keeper of the home, I'm just going to chalk this up as this doesn't mean anything. We're making the appointment tomorrow, you know, type of a thing. And so I went home and it was, you know, I had to turn on, it was still dial up, you know, and it's taking forever, you know, and he still has no idea what I'm doing. And I went ahead and finally Google pops up. I type in the meaning of the name Josiah. And as things are coming up, it means Jehovah healed. Of course, I want to like fall out of my seat. So that totally gives me like immediate hope that like, oh my goodness, like I did. Like this isn't just a fluke that I heard the name Josiah. That's, I mean, what are the odds? Like a name I've never thought of before. And then it means Jehovah healed. And so, of course, then I do go ahead and tell Daniel. We're both filled with hope. And I do have a doctor's appointment in a few days. They call it, you know, the aftermath appointment type, like what went wrong.
And so I went ahead and decided to keep that, but filled with so much hope, like, I'm not going to need anything. You know, I'm going to get pregnant next month, you know, because I heard this word from the Lord.
Right.
And so I go to the appointment. He came in. He was looking over the quality of my eggs, because they don't really know the quality of a person's eggs until they've actually extracted them and they've looked at them and everything. And he goes, you're 27, right? He goes, you have the quality of your eggs is that of a 60-year-old woman. And all I could think of was, my eggs have applied for their AARP card already. So they're poor quality. The reason why you probably miscarried is because of the chromosome abnormalities, because the eggs that are on my ovaries are old. And so he told me that I had less than a 3% chance of conception. And if I did conceive on my own, that I would most likely miscarry. And I do remember having a moment in that doctor's office where I was like, wait a minute, God, you said, and then I hear this, because he even said, this is, you know, you have a worse case than I thought. And I thought, but God, you said that I was going to have a son. So I have this like internal, I don't even know what he's saying at this point anymore. He's running over numbers. And I'm just having this internal dialogue with God, kind of like arguing back and forth, but you said, this doesn't match. Like, but then I remember about Abraham. I don't know too many stories in the Bible at that point, but I remembered Abraham, and he didn't consider his own body, but he considered the faithfulness of God. It was almost like God brought that back to me, that God, that Abraham knew, like he knew the facts. He said, my body is as good as dead, but I don't consider my own body. I consider the faithfulness of God. And so I was like, you know what? I don't consider my own body in this situation. It's as good as dead,
mm-hmm.
or at least older. I'm going to consider the faithfulness of God. So I remember I stood up, I shook the doctor's hand, and I walked out of there like a boss, thinking, I'm going to be pregnant in a month. You watch. Because I thought that I was. And so I was so excited. And I was so excited for a good year, thinking every month we're going to be pregnant because God said. And then I'm like, after a year, you start to think, maybe I did make it up. Maybe I didn't hear correctly. And I remember I was on my way to a church event on a Friday night. They called it Chick Night. And I was crying. I was like, God, I made it a year on what you told me. But now I'm starting to think I'm crazy. And at that point, I really hadn't told anybody, just my husband and my cat. We knew about it. You know, I was like, but I need something else. And I was like, straight up, I was like, I don't need a song to come on the radio at the right time. I mean, I laid out my specific. I don't want another scripture. I was like, I need a billboard neon sign that said, Alicia, you're going to have a son and to name him Josiah. Like, I need a burning bush. And so I go to church, and I'm new to the church, and my friend's sitting on the front row. And I'm like, of course you would be. So I don't even know what the woman spoke on. It had nothing to do with my situation. It didn't. Nothing stood out because I'm looking for this burning bush. Nothing.
Right.
And then finally at the end, you know, they have the ministry team come forward. And of course, I'm on the front row. So I basically look like I'm in the crowd of the mix, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think about was, I want to go home, put on my PJs and watch 2020 because that's my jam. But I sat there. They're singing a worship song. People are coming forward to be prayed for. I'm standing there with my arms out like I'm worshiping too. But like I said, I'm thinking about PJs in 2020. And this woman, whom I don't even know, comes up to me and puts her hand on my stomach. And she starts praying for the desires of my heart to be filled. At first, when she put her hand on my stomach, I opened up my eyes. And I thought, what are you doing touching me? I don't know you. Yeah, but then she starts praying. I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of like this. So I close my eyes, and tears are kind of streaming down my face. And then all of a sudden, she stops praying in the middle of a sentence. And I open up my eyes, and I almost want to say, no, you're doing good. But she blurts out, you're going to have a son. I just started weeping. I'm like, that's it. That's my burning bush. What I asked for. And so, of course, I went home higher than a kite. But again, nearly 6 years ago.
And in those 6 years, how has your relationship with God changed?
Oh, it's strong. It's stronger than ever. It's one of those things that when you find yourself in the wilderness, you can either walk around dry and thirsty and hungry, or you can be filled. You have a choice. And I found out that I was in the wilderness, and I was dry, and I was thirsty, and I needed something more than just a 911 call. You know, and people are always like, yeah, but you know, I didn't have a direct promise from God. I can't have that kind of hope. It doesn't matter if God would have given me. Now I have such a strong relationship with him. I know his character. I know his faithfulness. I know that the stories in the Bible, the seven women who were barren and conceived, and even all the stories of Jesus healing all who came to him. And I think that's the reason why 6 years ago was whenever I got that word, have a son. I don't even, honestly, I don't trust my own voice. I don't trust my own what I think I hear a lot of times, but I trust the word of God.
Yes.
And what he led me to is trusting in what he said. And I tell those women, I was like, even if I didn't have that direct promise, I don't even lean on that, honestly. I lean on his character. I lean on his faithfulness. I lean on not what my circumstances want to scream out that he is, that he gives these sicknesses, that he gives this to me to teach me a lesson. No, no, that's not him. I lean on what the Bible says, because the Bible wasn't written to show what he did. It was written so that he can show us even today what he does and who he is. And if we just start taking him as who he is, that he is who he says he is, and he'll do what he says he'll do, we'll see so much more in our lives, so much joy, so much hope, so much peace, and then those things lead to the inheritance that we have in him.
It's been 6 years since Alicia heard God say that she would have a son. She is still waiting with great faith. I ask her if she ever gets discouraged, and she said, honestly, no. She's so busy encouraging other women who struggle with infertility. She says the best way to beat discouragement is to be an encourager. A few years ago, she sensed God leading her to start a blog about her infertility journey. It's a place where she's very honest, very authentic, and she's been blown away by the thousands of women who have come there for hope. You can check it out at waitingforbabybird.com. Big thanks to Alicia for sharing her story today. Thanks also to the team that makes Epic possible. Thanks to Jason Rackow and Ted Ross for help with production. Thanks to Stefan Johnson for our theme music. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.